let's have a quick minute to remind ourselves where we are. We are in a place called Sorrow's End. I am going to say the temperatures here are ranging between the mid-40s and 50s. Let's translate that for Nathan real quick. F2C.
To Kelvin, right?
So that would be between 7 degrees and 12 degrees, Nathan. Gosh, our temperature scales are so very different. Our story opens on a close-up of fibers. This could easily be woven cotton or perhaps linen. It is clearly not a finely woven fabric. It's a practical fabric meant to do a very simple job and be discarded. The uneven fibers interlace with an uninspired but evenly dyed decoration. They are a dark brown that matches a skin tone that is darkened only by spots where it appears that ink and blood in mixture have slowly absorbed through the fabric. We can see now that this fabric is laid over the chest of Captain Orimar Vale. I think the captain may, at least in part, be directing his attention down to the fabric because it feels quite strange. Unlike most bandages, this is just laid over his chest in a single layer that has stopped a remarkable amount of bleeding very efficiently and perhaps distressing. It is as though he can feel the fibers as though they were his skin, that this is a new layer of skin that has been grafted onto his. He was instructed by his metaphysician and tattoo artist to leave this on for at least a week to allow the ink to set properly. He was also thanked for his story.
Orimar is mentally counting down the days and hours until he can stand in front of a full-length mirror, just shirtless, to bask in the fact that the tattoo is back again. He's waited, I guess in the grand scheme of things, not that long, but it feels like it's been ages since this important part of him was part of him. I guess we are in the captain's kind of quarters at the moment, where he wheels away from the mirror, like turns on his heels, to address Jonnet and Gable.
So I have to imagine the captain is wearing like one of those romance novel cover, like very deep V white linen
so
shirts that's open, so you can kind of appreciate where the tattoo will be. Yeah.
It's like when you do a little patch of wallpaper paint in your like kitchen and admire it every day, being like, eventually all of it is going to be this sunflower yellow. But for now, turns around to the two of you. Okay. Thank you for humoring of trying to keep up appearances while we're in public.
Fun for me. I'm over here. I was like, did I mention the Uhuru wit when I was in the office?
No. I think offhandedly called you Jonnet at one point, and I super did not mean to. And hey, if I get dinged for that down the line, that's my bad
Here's the important thing to remember. In that tattoo parlor especially, you had doctor-patient confidentiality. According to the metaphysicians, they are HIPAA compliant. So you don't need to worry about that.
The HIPAA will get them.
The HIPAA spirit will come for them. Moving forward, absolutely, I'm going to be looking for that. So you should be looking for that too.
Yeah.
I may have to hit the rewind on the script change toolbox if I catch myself slipping don't mean to in character, because there'll probably be times in character where I will actually intentionally give a thing away. Yes, we didn't need to maintain a disguise while getting our tattoos done, but I figured it would be best to practice in a safe environment where we wouldn't have our heads on the chopping block should we forget.
It's kind of fun, kind of like feeling like people think that we're gone and we're dead. We kind of can get into anything. This feels like Jonathan starts like rubbing his hands together. This is going to be such a good surprise.
Gable turns to Jonnet. Have you messaged your family at all?
Oh, my family! Jonnet runs out the door.
Well, Jonnet,
I gotta go get a pen and paper.
As you stand up, like when you are struck through with that, I would like you to, you know, I just want, I think for a spend from your intellect, we'll give you that instead of making a check for it.
Okay. Pause for character sheet.
While we do that, because time has passed, do our values refresh?
Yes, everything is refreshed.
Fabulous. I was at very low vitality last time. You know, I maintain the, I think it's the Blades in the Dark that establishes the kind of way to play a character is drive a character like you stole it. And so I'm very liberal with going down to very low health if it means I get what I want. I will probably end up doing that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
This system is very friendly natural to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, go for it.
All I have on here is somehow 2 points of fate. But as if I have not done anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
How big of a spend?
Just one. Just 1 point.
All right. Cool.
Jonnet, you feel struck through for a moment. It is one of those things where there is an immediate tightness in your chest, as though your entire body is rushing to support your heart, which is now thumping. A cold sweat breaks out over you. You have been so distracted by everything that you are doing, so obsessed with staying alive, protecting your immediate crew, you've done the very thing that Douglas chewed you out over when you first arrived on your family's doorstep. You have forgotten your family once again. And it is not as though you left them in a place that felt immediately safe. You know, Acheron, at least to some degree, was swallowed up by the forest. One of the first things that you did when you emerged from that forest was send out a note to one of the few people that you knew you could get a message to, your sister Zana. And it is in this moment that I think your eye briefly flickers open and you can see on one of the shelves, on Oromar's bookshelf, where he keeps his many books on star watching, various tomes of great valuable knowledge, at least to somebody with the interests of Oromar Vale, there is an old leather-bound book that appears to have a strangely smooth and beautiful binding. There is a feather sticking out of that book. And that feather like pulses with a faint magical energy.
Are we talking angel feather?
Not angel feather. This is clearly a bird feather.
So the panic, the shock, the look around, and then it's like, yeah, the quick flash, and Jonnet kind of goes quiet again, and he's kind of like, why am I focusing on this book? And then at this point, he knows not to, there's a level of like questioning that we don't necessarily have to do with the eye. And so he reaches up and what do I notice about the book?
So you notice.
And the feather.
Yeah. The book first, because the feather is lodged in the book. This book is familiar to you because it is a book that you and Travis cataloged many, many months ago, actually nearly a year ago at this point. Longer in time, but obviously not perception, that you recovered from the civility when the Uhuru took it down. This book was with the angel feather that you recovered from the civility. You remember Dref saying something about it belonging to a member of the Church of the Slain God. And the writing on it definitely looks familiar. You've seen this on many church tomes. This is done in the language of the church, a bastardized version of the language of the angels. There are long, flowing, interconnected lines that have branching off of them, symbols and lines that look very similar to long feathers when they are laid out and stacked over one another. This book is old. Despite that, the binding looks fresh, unmarred. It's almost warm to the touch. Inside, you can see that the pages are clearly yellowed, dog-eared, some of them even flaking. It looks like this book has been through a great deal. And then you see the feather itself, lodged in the pages. This feather is, it must be the feather to some kind of hawk. It is a larger feather. This doesn't belong to a songbird or something of the like. And you recognize on it very clearly and very quickly the handwriting that is very familiar to you, handwriting from your sister. It just says, "You're alive? You're going to be in so much trouble."
Oh, when did that get there?
You don't know. You wrote off the message, and very shortly after, the Saratura was spotted, and you went from the Saratura to a not-too-long journey over to the islands where you mind peaked. A lot happened, and you didn't exactly know where and how a feather might be returned to you if it was sent, and clearly, a feather made its way to the captain's office without your notice.
I think Jonnet takes the feather and kind of just like turns around 180 degrees and kind of just like holds it out to the group, kind of like pleading eyes of like, anybody?
Isn't that one of the feathers that you and your sister got as a gift when you came of age?
Yeah, Jonnet like leans out the end of the hallway, just kind of like holding it out, kind of pleading eyes to no one in the hallway. Like, Spit, did this come through? And no one told me.
Spit, who is I think furiously making out with just another crew member, like both of them freeze and pause and try to briefly pretend that this was a professional interaction that they were having. They're both like,
professional makeout.
One has a mop, one has like a cloth, and they're like pretending to clean.
I'm
sorry, what? What was, I was just busy cleaning the ship. So,
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. this feather, you recognize it?
Spit squints at it.
I can't say that I do. The captain doesn't like me cleaning the ship in his office because of incidents. So I tend to avoid it when I think I'll be seen.
Uh-huh. And I guess on the visibility side of things, you didn't think you'd be seen doing...
He
gestures
to... Cleaning the ship? Cleaning the ship? I mean... You know, there's a general risk, but let me tell you this, youngin, that can make it more exciting sometimes. Sometimes it's actually better if you can be seen, but it's not a certainty.
Okay, Spit.
There are degrees of being seen that provide different thrills through the process.
Okay, all right.
No, don't come over here. You stay as far back as you were. Johnny comes back into the room. And the rules of this the rules of this feather, can Jonnet whisper another message and then send it back out?
Yeah, so this isn't a whispering message, and it's not the feathers in particular, though you were gifted some feathers with it. You were essentially imbued with a technique where you can take almost any feather write a message on it and
yes,
have okay. it delivered to the person you intend it to be delivered to.
Mm. All right. Jonnet flips the feather over to the other side, takes a quill and writes out.
Hold on like, there.
Come on.
No, I I'm glad that this messaging system is so discreet that you know that you can receive one and it still caught you by surprise. It means it would be unlikely to be easily intercepted, which is important. But ultimately, we must realize that we are currently keeping a low profile. Not to say you shouldn't have told your family your current state of affairs, but updating them could be dangerous. You're going to have to think carefully about what you say.
It might be worth, let's assume all correspondence going in and out of the city may be observed. I think that's a safe assumption, yes? Mm-hmm. But if there are any sort of coded messages or ways you know a pathway is available to you, maybe not necessarily the feathers, but perhaps if you want to send Douglas a letter from a business associate of his that you've made up in your imagination, that might be worth doing. And, you know, I would love to send a strongly worded letter to one former crewmate of ours who put us in this situation. I would love to send Travis a letter and say, hey, bitch, what's wrong with you? But that there are options available to us of varying levels of, you know, stress.
Jonnet thinks about it for a second. It's like, I mean, yeah, you're right.
At the very least, this is an opportunity for you to try a new name for yourself.
Like new, so I can't do Joe Nut.
I no? suppose if all that's right. something that is currently on the record, patterning
it makes me
might
giggle,
be.
Though I like it.
It all is right, fine. Rather funny. I agree. Right. The captain does not smile.
Do we have a Lancaster or Lancaster in this world yet?
No,
a Lancaster. No, I don't.
What's that?
Oh.
The Lancasters, I believe, were involved in the War of the Roses, if I'm
yes,
not mistaken.
It is a part of Northern England.
Pull them out of history. Into They're terrified.
Oh, we got some roundheads and cavaliers now.
All right. Well, then, I'm going to put an in. I'm going to put an order in for the Kessler family Griffin feed, and it's going to be from a Tiago Lancaster.
Ah, ooh. I like it.
And let's see. Wait, from I guess there's a world where that's come up, and I think when Zana and Jonnet were like. If they were ever like playing pretend, like that would be his like his high status name, mm-hmm. Tiago Lancaster. And so ooh. I'm gonna place an order in for what's an absurd amount of Griffin feed?
Oh, I mean, to suggest the number of birds one ship would contain, going above maybe 5 or 6 would be indulgent.
What if you placed an absurd order, but only in samples?
That's funny.
Of yeah. samples.
All right. I will take
2 tons of samples.
200 of your finest sample packs, and I would like them delivered. And then he puts them down at this location on, and then he puts Zana's birthday.
Ooh, you say that you've used this name Tiago before. Tell me more about them. What are they like?
Tiago Lancaster?
Yeah.
Oh. He is hot. He is, his family's from the coastal regions.
Oh.
He's actually one of the people that, he's, his family owns a restaurant chain uh-huh. that is very famous for. Weirdly enough, they're fish.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they found a way to purify their fish, mm-hmm. and he talks like this.
Okay.
And Janet Fantastic. Straightens up his back. He talks like this, and he does not take any rabble rousing.
I love it. Oh, I love it. I just love the dreams people make when they're putting on a new personality. It's just the really getting into the character. I love it. I can never do it, but I love other people's imaginations.
Well, Gable, you did mm-hmm. say at one point you went under the alias of Thomas the Terrifier.
Yes.
When you were doing assassin work.
That's right.
And I'm going to tell you right now, my character work was extremely limited. You know how sometimes someone brings a part to themselves and they basically only do the same thing over and over, but they're very good at it? That's me.
Well,
I have played with people like that, yes.
There is a variation for the identity of Thomas the Terrifier that you have skipped out on for the last little bit. You only resorted to in certain extreme situations when you didn't want to be identified. Thomas the Terrifier wore an almost featureless copper mask.
Oh, see, I do a lot of prop work and costume work.
Right. It helps. It helps.
It keeps your hands busy. And really, some people say that the mask acts for you and you're not really using your skills, but I'm just trying to get by, honestly.
More than anything, I just want to make sure that if I address you by a name, you'd actually respond and not forget. Not to be patronizing.
I will try so hard, but I cannot guarantee.
Hey, you know what? Me too. mm-hmm.
Captain, what about you? Captain, what about you?
I do believe that I introduced myself in, goodness me, there is a out of character. There was a record. Tyler did a very good job of recording, like having a transcript of. I think I set the character name as Julian Larbalest, but I'm trying to double check. Okay,
sure,
cool.
You're corroborating.
Perfect. Well, when I was in the tattoo parlor, Oromar says, switching vocal register on a dime, I did introduce myself as one Julian Larbalest. Mm-hmm. And I do believe I shall be maintaining that through our ruse. If nothing else, because I think naming myself after a type of firearm is very funny.
That's very funny. What are some likes and dislikes?
Julian Larbalest's likes and dislikes. Well, I suppose what would be out of character, the equivalent of like yachting in the sky, like a sky schooner of some kind.
There has to be like some kind of like small, like a speedboat, but for the air.
Yeah, what it would have to be. Okay, we'll world build this right now. It would basically involve taking a featherweave sail that could be used for, you know, one large ship that could do a lot of commercial work and cutting it down significantly and putting it around a very high intensity furnace so that like basically a small patch is sporting an entire tiny ship. So you wouldn't be able to move cargo. You would be able to move around, but like you'd barely be able to move weapons and whatnot. And like they're probably max, you can get two or three adult people on one of these things. So they only exist for having fun and flying around.
mm-hmm.
And you, I think, essentially would need to rent the privilege of doing that from a privateer company that has just cut down its sail to hundreds of small ribbons.
Mm-hmm. Why, yes, I do enjoy the occasional sky yachting during the randomized summers that we have. Mm. It took quite a lot of organization to make sure that we could do that with the lads, you know, the lads.
Lads weekend.
Lads weekend. But on the other hand, my dislikes, I do hate a rainy day, and I do hate a cold shower.
Yes.
You know, the idea of being at an uncomfortable temperature is just abhorrent to me, honestly.
I was about to say, when was the last time that you had? When was the last time that Julian was uncomfortable?
I mean, you know, there's been inconveniences in my life, times, jobs, people. But ultimately, Julian Larbalest knows how to get his man and how to get a warm shower when he needs one.
Tremendous, tremendous. This is excellent character work from everyone. I'm very excited.
All right, you go, Gable.
I'm Thomas, and I like... Oh, what's something that a person would like? hot soup.
Okay.
I like a good sleep. Sleeping is something that I enjoy. I don't commit murder. And I love when the leaves change,
okay,
between all the colors that they do.
Is there a particular reason? Because obviously you have you're an upstanding member of society, Thomas.
Yes,
so
yes.
You have no reason for subterfuge.
Okay.
So what unfortunate thing happened to you to require the Mask of Bronze?
Okay. As a human man, which I am, I...
Very important.
Started wearing the mask after an unfortunate... cystic acne is such a problem for men of my age.
Right.
And I tried various medicines and poultices. And over time, it has worked, but there's quite a bit of a... I break out, and I just didn't want to have to worry about it because the makeup irritates the cystic acne. So yeah. I just decided to wear the mask. Mm-hmm. It's very cooling.
This is important because now that we've set this up, Gable, there may be an opportunity or a time while we're in this masquerade where you're going to have to, like, I don't know, demask. So I think it's really important that we actually give you acne before this thing.
Okay, I'll.
So
do
I'm gonna
my
go get some grease, and I'm gonna be back, and we're gonna lather
please
it on your face.
Please don't grease me. Please don't grease me.
No, I'm gonna grease you up real good.
No,
it's gonna be.
Jonathan, do not wish to be greased.
We'll come back to the greasing.
Please. Okay. But that's my situation as Thomas, and I'm gonna be honest. Most of the people that I interacted with never really got past into personal level stuff, so I never really had to think about it. So this is a good exercise for me.
Of course. A final thought, Gable. Oromar goes round, sits on his desk, leans back, boots crossed on the desk. We see kind of like an echo shot of young Oromar in the Pirates of Penzance, long, shiny boots, it seems. There is a bit of channeling back to his reckless younger days when he's trying to be Julian. That's what he's trying to, like, pull on. God, acting techniques within acting techniques. We are fully putting on the hat here.
Meta.
Yeah, he kicks back and is like, so before a more serious kind of bit of planning, when you are actively killing people as Thomas the Terrifier, what is your calling card? If you are a hired assassin, people will want to know that you personally did the job. So what's the calling card here?
That is a great question. I am trying to... It's been a bit. And I think, as I told you, towards the end, there was very little killing because I was sort of a part of a war of attrition with a lot of these heads of state. Early on, the calling card was leaving the body to be found, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then this is going to be gross. This is going to be yucky. An eyeball. I used to take just one. Well, just pop it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Where did you put them?
Well, then it was placed in a specific part of... whosoever else we were threatening, looking at that person, like when they woke up. So it's just like, I'm looking at you. I
Gable.
See you. It wasn't my
That's
idea.
Cold.
It wasn't my idea. It was part of the roster of services. And then it became a trend and became part of fashion.
They just kept ordering the eyeball treatment.
Eyeball. And I I couldn't turn it down the money, but it was deeply unpleasant for sure.
We may have to bear that in mind for when
it's yucky.
If you need to kind of highlight yourself as back in business again, we may need to think about reliving that old MO. Thank you for sharing.
I'll John, open up the rate card and hopefully people, there's different fashions now.
Jonnet, where is the book that you found that feather in? Have you been holding it?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I need you to make a magic roll.
Okay.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master. Glad to check in with you before the holiday. In case you couldn't tell by listening to my voice, I am still sick. I have been sick now for going on 7 weeks. It's a problem. It's held up a lot of our production stuff over here at OSN. I don't know when I am going to be releasing Skyjoust. I know it is very soon. It is January at the latest, and I am so sorry that it has taken so long, but it is coming. Thank you for your patience on that. But we do have some holiday goodies for you. Over the One Shot, and I think even the Skyjax feed, we're going to be doing a feed drop next week, which we would normally take off for Christmas. However, I have a new actual play production that's going to be coming out that is not Skyjoust or even Skyjax related at all, that I am very excited about, and I wanted to share a sample with everybody in the audience. Over on Patreon, we're going to be getting a new episode of Starwall for the holiday. So that is some lovely stuff to look forward to. And of course, if you want to support those productions and any other productions happening here on the One Shot Network, you should head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. You can follow us as a free account. I will be trickling out some goodies for those free accounts. But of course, most benefits start at $5 a month or more, which gets you access to our secret audio archive, full of bonus content for things like Skyjax and original productions like Starwall. I've got lots of cool things headed your way coming in the new year, and I'm so excited to share them. But first, let's get through the rest of this episode. Now, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. I need you to make a magic roll.
Okay.
To let you know, going to be a hard check, but your magic right now is currently at 3d8.
What? 5, 5, 5. All right, here we go. Fives all around, 15.
All right. That is opportunities. Okay. Opportunities, but no successes. What does that mean? So, Jonnet, you have moved from a space where, you know, you were very panicked. You were scrawling out this note on this feather, trying to strategically avoid tipping off any parties that might be unfriendly to you, that the Uhuru is not back in action, but still figure out a way to communicate to your family that you are okay. You write this out on the book. I don't know, have you sent off the feather yet, or are you just hanging it on to the message that you wrote?
Yeah, he's still got the feather in hand. He's got his sample order, 200 sample packs of the barbecue blasted
Griffin feed.
Yes, but he hasn't sent it off yet.
So yeah, I rolled against you. You got 3 failures on this versus your 3 opportunities that you rolled. So you have since moved your writing implement and everything to the hand that is holding the book. And as your crew around you is right now theorizing, trying to get into character, trying to absorb themselves in the identities that are going to keep your ship safe through this, your other hand is fidgeting. I think your eye feels itchy for a second, but you might rub it and dismiss it, and you keep fidgeting until you have found a heavy knife, a cleaver, actually. The cleaver that Orimar recovered from the Ceraturo. And that has become the object that your fidgeting fixates on. And you begin tossing it kind of like casually. You know, I think Jonnet is, especially being somebody who works with the Kusarigama as his like primary weapon now, you're somebody who is used to doing tricks and whatnot. And this blade does feel pretty well weighted and pretty natural in your hand. And the tricks start to come very easy with it. It is what it was going to try to do was nick you and just get a drop of your blood. But I don't.
The cleaver?
The cleaver. But I don't think it's going to accomplish that. Instead, I think this knife just ends up on your hip. You fidget with it to the point where, you know, you are used to just stashing your Kusarigama when you are done fidgeting, and you walk about with it. You have plenty of places where you could hook this knife onto your belt just so absentmindedly. The weight of it is almost entirely not noticeable to you. It's like you didn't grab it from the shelf. You just grabbed it from your own hip, played with it for a second, and then put it back on your hip.
I mean, is this something that... Okay. I think the itching of the eye, like I think if throughout the fidgeting, I think it's like the itching of the eye that Jonnet notices first. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh man, like I actually rarely ever have this sensation this far up my forehead. And then I think in doing that, he goes to like scratch his eye. Mm-hmm. And then he realizes that the hand that he's holding, the hand that he's like using to like rub his eye, also has the cleaver in it.
So I'll have to stop you there because the role was for you noticing that this has happened. That is the part you failed. You did get a bunch of opportunities, and what the opportunities have accomplished for you is it didn't bite you. It didn't get you. It is just close to you.
Okay.
Imagine this cleaver like a flea carrying the bubonic plague. It didn't bite John. It didn't infect him, but it is taking a ride on him right now.
Enjoy your cursed item.
Great.
Have fun.
I love this. And I think it gets to a point later in the conversation where it starts with like the back of Jonnet's hand rubbing his eye. By the end of this conversation, Jonnet will be rubbing his eye with the back of the cleaver. but it's not going to get him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't notice anything.
Just something that happened to you.
I guess we notice, but I don't think.
Do we?
Well, if we're all in the same room currently, but
you were all like through that scene, you were all having the conversation that you just
and
had.
It was just naturally happening in the background while I'm talking to Thomas. Yeah. Gotcha.
How often does Orimar comment on the way Gable prepares tea or the way Jonnet, moves about the compasses and globes in this office?
As not very easy often. As breathing, of course. So, yes, continuing to recline. Aside from your previous MO, what I did want to talk about are two things that I think we definitely need to do here. As I recall, this location is particularly notable for its pigments, Sarazand has two in particular. One, the red crimson that the Red Feathers use. We're definitely going to have to make use of that to go and secure enough plausible coats for all who'd want to be attending the masquerade ball. After all, I have my own, but we will need to kit out everybody who is attending. Fine ones for people who will be up close, but if the ship is seen at a distance, people at least need to be in the right hue, if you understand. The other major dye that they produce is from clay, as I understand, a much more muted color, but definitely one that is not our standard fare for what the Uhuru looks like. And we could do with a bit of repainting if we don't want people to recognize our ship on site. I would worry about people recognizing the, Flagstaff statue, but that's not been especially an issue for a while.
The color that Orimar is referring to is Solo Tristeza, a type of periwinkle blue that is common to this region and extremely affordable. It is kind of a popular paint for ships, it being a mineral-based pigment that is just like super, super cheap because it is almost produced through waste products. It is something that exists after clay from this area has been dug up and fired and then ground down into a fine powder. So that should be a relatively affordable way to repaint the ship. Not that you're hurting for money especially, but it would be a color that would not be noticed by many ports that you go through because it's so affordable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my question becomes, how are we trying to just like, are we just trying to paint the ship, have the ship look just like any other ship, or are we trying to go like the exact opposite direction, just make it like look dingy and grimy? Because my thought is, if it's the latter, we let the orphans paint the ship.
That might be let a reasonable way it. To keep them entertained, to be honest.
Right. Yeah.
The ship is big. They're small. It's going to take a while. They'll be busy.
I think us looking too shabby, we may need to make some changes before the ball itself showing up in a shabby ship would probably give the game away. Yeah. But we can always obtain a new ship temporarily for the heist itself. Speaking of heists, I don't know too much about how the dying process here works, but I assume if we find some way of being able to get access to the dye storage, we may be able to go and bring in the clothes that we need to dye, get them dyed, and leave is the current where my plan is sitting, but we may need to do some scouting to find the specifics.
In the meantime, I do... One of the things I suggest we do is if Jonnet needs to send a letter and I need to send a very mean letter to Travis, in the meantime, I could start doing my correspondence to see just who is still around, who is still alive amongst my contacts in the syndicate and, you know, through the back channels, of course. And doing that now, we can... more accurately, we don't want to just come to the ball and start saying names of people who have passed away. That'll give us up quite easily. So if there is a reference desk in town, that might be an excellent place to go. I would check first to see what sort of secrets we're willing to give in that vein. But once we get there, that might be an easy thing. Second of all, just a little bit of business. Wendell has got to go. We'll have him travel under a pseudonym. So it's not obvious that it's him, but my guy is so frustrated right now. And the sooner we can send him off bon voyage, the better, honestly. So whatever we need to do to get him away from that, that's probably one of my primary considerations.
Mm. I wonder what non-air transport is available in this part of the world. He might have to be traveling for a while to get to a recognizable piece of civilization for him.
I can ask if he wants to stick around. It would shock me if that was the case. If there was an escape route.
I definitely appreciate your sense of judgment in this matter. I think you know him as a person better than I do at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let him go. Let him go.
He's such a good friend. He's such a dear friend. My man has been such a downer for so long. I just any change in scenery is going to be so much better for him than just, oh, that he's got two birds in the beard now. Just let him go.
Yeah.
We're going to do our best. So I can do a little side quest on that one, but just we got to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm. That's just... Armar leans back and glances out of the window. I hope his wife waited for him.
Ooh, come on. Kat, why you gotta bring that into the... It wasn't a question before, and now I want to know.
See, these are the sorts of conversations that we've been desperately trying not to have with him for weeks now.
Yes, I can understand why he would want to be on leave. It's just a shame. I'm sure he would enjoy the... soiree we have in mind in future, but I think at least in his instance family should come first.
Who knows, honestly. I've not spoken to the fella, but I don't know. that it's like a ghost walking through the halls. If a ghost were extremely solid and cried real loud.
Those are the worst ghosts.
Yeah, it's very forward crying.
All right, then.
So it sounds to me like there needs to be some, you want to do some fact-finding about mm-hmm. the current Red Feather Syndicate, and an information desk is kind of what you're looking for to do that, or an agent of the information desk. You need to figure out a way to disguise the ship. So I'm assuming right now the ship is parked on its own outside of town somewhere. And that the only people who have gone into town were really Gable, Orimar, and Jonnet to get tattoos. Mm-hmm. Jonnet, specifically, where's your tattoo at? We haven't investigated that yet, and I do want to make sure that that gets brought into this. Think about what Jonnet got and where it is. Oh, that's right. That's right. You mentioned like
collarbone or something.
Yeah.
The wind or something. Yeah.
Okay. Sick. Never mind. We do know that. It seems like, yeah, we want to know. And for that, you need to procure to disguise your ship. You need to procure pigments. You need to get enough paint to repaint the Uhuru and any major identifying details for it. You also want to get your hands on Syndicate Red in order to dye a bunch of clothes so that you'll be able to outfit the whole crew to participate in this infiltration that you're going to pull off, which mm-hmm. is good and makes sense to me. So it seems like some of you need to go into town. You also need to figure out a way, if you're going to send Wendell off, how you're going to send Wendell off. So that there are a couple scenes. There's figuring out how to purchase dye and whatnot. There is going to an information desk or figuring out some other way to get information in this town. And there is talking to Wendell. So what do you want to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to hit the streets in terms of walking around town like a tourist. And kind of establishing that kind of energy, because then I think that's a reasonable way to ask about transport away from the region. You know, I want to go and see the sights in the next city over. How would I get there? Kind of questions. And, it, you know, being able to do a bit of surface casing the joint of what this town is like before we get to the nitty gritty.
Excellent. Then I think we cut to Sorrow's End. Sorrow's End is a strangely beautiful place. There is a lot of color here. The buildings are done with stucco, piled up around wood logs and smoothed. It dries to this beautiful periwinkle color. That in turn has been decorated with red and brown tile work around many different buildings. Some of these look very hastily constructed, but the colors involved in their construction make them very attractive. The town itself is set up with cobblestone. It resembles a lot of the towns and places in terms of city planning that you would recognize in the mainland, particularly closer to Arum. The streets, like the stones in the streets, are very rough. They are not rounded and worn down. It makes you like understand very quickly that this town can't be older than a few decades. The Red Feather influence here has not been set up long. Everything around here does look new. There is a smell that pervades this place, a very strong scent. Many of the buildings around you are clearly factories of some kind. They have smokestacks coming out of them. There are plumes of both smoke from coal or peat or some other burnable substance, and steam. There are clearly very large industrial operations moving around those places. And moving in and out of those buildings, you can see people who are dressed in flowing garments that appear to be tightly bound about the wrists, the waist, and the ankles. Everyone here appears to have gloves. Most of the workers are wearing some kind of mask, and many of them even have goggles. Each of them have like stains on their clothing. There appears to be like a lot of powder and reddish browns that like pervade the colors around them, just like from dirty work clothes. You don't see many, but you do see a few people who are not in the factories right now walking around town. They are dressed in a similar fashion. It is, but a more dressed up version of it. They clearly still have the flowing clothing, the garments that like really are only cinched at the wrists and ankles and waist. And over that, they are wearing coats that are very well decorated. They too also have masks, mostly drawn over the nose and mouth. These masks are dyed, some are embroidered, some are beaded. They are decorated in different ways. But walking around as Uhuru pirates with lighter clothing that is covered by jackets and odd bits and ends to deal with the weather makes you feel like you stand out. There is very little exposed skin in many of the streets and thoroughfares around here. This town looks like it supports a population of probably over 1,000 people. There are a lot of buildings for factories. There are some tenements thrown up where people have clearly dormitory or apartment style living. And there are also buildings that, whether they are civic buildings or Red Feather owned buildings is harder to say. Most of the Red Feather owned buildings do have a tile work display of the logo for the Red Feather Syndicate on them. But they appear to, most towns that you know of are towns that have been taken over by the Red Feather Syndicate, where there would be a city hall or civic office that the Red Feather Syndicate interacts with and has their own buildings near. But this is a town entirely fabricated by the syndicate itself. So it's a bit strange to only see Red Feather factories, Red Feather offices, and a few like common establishments. There do appear to be some pubs and whatnot. There are some other, again, more hastily constructed buildings. Then we get to the stonework buildings. Buildings with clearly imported marble. And chief among them is a cathedral, a grand cathedral, marked with the bleeding eye of the Church of the Slain God. There are also tenements that pop up around the church buildings. These too have the Gothic hallmarks of church construction on them. And branching off of the cathedral, there is something of a sprawling building that also has its own ventilation built of it, above it, that you can see in the cold, crisp air of early morning. Steam is flowing out of it. It's odd. You've never seen a construction like this anywhere on any church building. But apart from that, this is a well-populated town, and although a good portion of that population appears to be hard at work today, it's a pretty place to stroll around, even if you feel out of place immediately entering it.
What's the street level security looking like? Because this is it's very interesting that it's a Red Feather like built town. It makes me think of like when tech companies or media companies have a full campus that's essentially built and run by them. And then it's like, well, if you're only ever expecting employees or people who operate within this network to exist here, how do you keep that safe? Do you care as much?
You but do look at least for red feather security. Where a pirate sees red feathers, a pirate looks for red feather soldiers. And you do see some. Like, there is clearly a presence of red feather authority here. But there is a way that a red feather soldier looks in a town where they expect pushback. I don't want to imply that red feathers have a level of readiness. I think there is a mask of cruelty that the soldiers wear on their face in places where they expect to have to put down resistance to red feather rule. Mm-hmm. You don't see those soldiers here. You're more likely to see talking and laughing. Outside the factories, you do see red feather guards posted up, but they are smoking pipes and whatnot with factory workers who are clearly on breaks. Some of them are playing Illimat with people who are moving in and around the factories. You, even if you take time to look into the taverns and whatnot, you see that there are red feathers posted up at tables, basically interacting with factory workers. Mm. So the vibe here is a little different than it might be in, say, Aurum or Bujanith, or I'm trying to think of like a heavily, I don't think you've been in a heavily red feather controlled city yet. So you, Dumignon was a little bit more independent of red feathers, but there were still presences there. Mm-hmm. And those red feather strongholds were on higher alert, and these are not.
Good to know. Maybe it means, well, loose lips sink ships. So if the red feathers around here are relatively relaxed and chatty, we can definitely play that to our advantage. There's a glance to Thomas and Tiago. We may have to buy some new clothes for the weather. It's frightfully cold here. At least for now, appearing as friendly tourists, I think, is to our benefit. But if we do dress as the locals, it might actually be relatively difficult for us to be noticed.
I'll go shopping. Let's do it.
All right. We return to a fine campaign podcast tradition and we go shopping. Sky Jacks.
All right. Thank you for everybody for coming to this captain's quarters meeting. I have noticed that our revenues are down. So despite the gold bars and stuff that we have in the hold, so I needed to add a sponsored segment to this meeting.
Oh.
So this captain's meeting has been brought to you by the D-Luminaries.
Oh, okay. Amazing. Let me pick up the copy here and just read this. Oh, it says they want us to personalize it. That's nice.
Yeah.
The D-Luminaries, have you ever... That's written down here. It's a...
it's yeah, been... I get it.
D-Luminaries, comma, have you ever, comma...
Okay, now it begins again. Have you ever been dissatisfied with the... godlike beings existing in the world of Shreer?
I think so. I would say so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. There's been a friction a little bit.
Have you ever felt that the bargains you strike somehow either never come to fruition or are somewhat unfair?
I would say absolutely.
Yeah.
I too have met the Forest Queen before, yes.
Are you interested in being a trailblazer in the world of deification?
Well, now this
we're a trailblazer
like
in the world of everything else.
Then you'll enjoy the D-Luminaries. And now we're supposed to play with the product, discuss the product, it says.
Yeah, we've prepared an unboxing for this. They put it inside many boxes simultaneously. almost in the Matroska like setup. So really, it's going to take a while, but please do bear with.
Let's see here. We've got the meat person. And this appears to be a jovial-looking fellow who's holding a human foot in his hand.
Oh.
Now it does say that this stands for dread and violence, very much like a similar godlike figures that we've come to know and love. But it says here he's also really into feet. So that speaks to okay. someone like me.
Okay.
That's an improvement right. in some circles, absolutely.
Yeah, they've definitely spent their time doing marketing research, I guess, with these new deluminaries. Everybody deluminates. Let's see. We have here the Desert Prince.
Ooh.
Yeah. Entirely made like a very cacti silhouetted individual. It says here that it's dodgy dealings, digging incredibly large holes.
Ooh, I like that.
And casinos, apparently.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking we needed something for that. Yeah. I love it.
Nice. We got, I've got a card here. It says, I pulled the dude. It's just, it's just a shirtless guy with a bucket hat and Vans on the beach. Cool guy, chill vibes, mellow tunes, no combat, but we'll take up about 3 hours of time. The dude.
Hey,
sure. Okay.
Sometimes again.
Sometimes, great, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, okay, I don't know if this is one-to-one for, you know, our personal luminaries. I assume this wants to be a replacement for the changeling. This just says the big asshole. For jerks, people who leave and die, and individuals who are just a man and don't turn into anything else. The big asshole.
Oh, yeah. One of the minor themes is punchable faces and strangleable voices.
Right. I'm flicking through the copy. Who sent us this, by the way? I really should take advertising sponsorships from people I know and trust, but
you
also desperate measures. You want to stay on the cutting edge of the Captain's Quarter meeting industry, you know? So, you know, not every Captain's meeting can be sponsored by Raid Shadow Legends. So,
I wish.
Yeah, well, it appears to be Heath Raker. Created the deluminaries.
Expand on that?
Well, he's from a family of people who rake leaves as their only job, and he took some of his idle time as really only rake leaves when it's autumn, and that only happens a dozen or so times a year, so you can't always be raking leaves.
No.
And he turned his eye towards game design.
And you're also reading the copy.
I'm reading the copy. That's the story of Heath Raker.
About the author. Yeah. I mean, you got to respect a creative who finds time in their workday to pursue other endeavors.
That's hard. You've
got to stay on that grind, on that hustle.
Yeah.
But if you're interested in the deluminaries and the wide variety of characters we have in them, if you use sponsor code Orimar when you go to your local courier service to place your order for the deluminaries, you also get a free t-shirt, which I have here with me.
That is a ill-fitting t-shirt.
XL only.
It's free though, so
you know,
you can't complain.
One side is longer than the other though. It feels like it's just incomplete.
You get what you get, and you don't get the regular luminaries. You get the deluminary specifically.
Yeah. Considering the exclusive item, you know, when people, when you're wearing that to your local ale house and people are, you're in the attire of the deluminaries. Why don't we play a game of Sycamat together, and we'll be able to, weirdly enough, that game also has a harmonic convergence.
Here's an interesting thing. It appears to be based on the music of the Septemberists.
Yeah.
So that's a fun little connection for folks who are into indie rock.
Right, right. Captain, this is a great idea. I think we're going to sell. These things are going to be flying off the shelf. How in debt are you? Because we have so much money that I don't even know that we you should never have to take on a sponsor. What's going on? That.
What's the situation?
Well, so you know how I have my signature captain's coat, former Red Feathers, in the exclusive die and all that, and then we get into a fight, and I get a large amount of blood and gunpowder on it and everything, and it doesn't clean out. Okay. These things don't dry clean very well. So I kind of have to get a new one every time, and I'm kind of on my...
These are single-use coats?
That you simply mustn't.
Yeah, I mean, and it's such a sensitive fabric. Actually, like, he does have to replace it every scene. Every scene that we shoot, it's a new
tremendously
coat.
Wasteful.
Some people are sneakerheads. Some people buy a bunch of watches. And I happen to have a lot of this one coat for continuity reasons.
Sneakerheads don't throw away the shoes after they wear them.
Right. Yeah. If anything, they work harder to preserve the shoes for longer.
I'm going to slow you down there. Imagine if Orimar had retained every single one of these coats. We'd never have any closet space.
But then you keep.
Wait a minute. We don't have any closet space right now. Wait, John walks over to a closet, opens it. Coats fall out.
You know, I buy them in bulk. I got to deal with the Swiftwells. They sort me out.
What? Let me peel down this wallpaper. Oh my God. The entire ship is stuffed with coats.
They're also an excellent insulator. What can I say? They're multi-purpose, although I can't really wear the ones.
The support beams, they're just tightly compressed coats. These could fall over at a moment's notice. Oh my God. The sails are made of denim.
Let me shake one of the orphans. Oh no, they're just coats.
It's coats.
It's all coats. Coats all the way down.
Sponsor the code Orimar for your free t-shirt. Maybe we'll throw some coats in as well.
We're drowning in the coats.
Goats! Oh. Goats!
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Orimar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG, or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott, or on his website,
ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Allie Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at DreamsToBecome, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.